a very sincere thank you to our listeners. It's exciting. Garrick and I in the spring will be at our 100th episode, and Garrick, 100 episodes ago, do we think we'd be here? I don't know. But listeners, thank you for tuning in, giving us suggested topics. We enjoy our discussions and exploring what's new in legislation, financing, construction. We like getting out there and seeing what's new and so forth.
Welcome to Buzz House, a Baker Tilly podcast where you can hear all the buzz around multifamily housing with all the info you need to help you win now and anticipate tomorrow. Hi, I'm Don Bernards, the partner in charge of Baker Tilly's multifamily housing practice.
And I'm Gary Gibson, a partner at Baker Tilly, also specializing in consulting on multifamily housing transactions across the country.
Let's get started.
For today's episode, Garrick and I are going to give a review of some of the highlights from this year's BuzzHouse episodes, along with discussing what we're looking forward to seeing in the year ahead. So, Garrick, I'm looking forward to jumping in with you in a couple minutes.
Let's do it.
So, before Garrick and I jump in, just a couple of highlights from around the industry. The 9% federal low-income housing tax credit per capita multiplier will increase 15 cents in 2024 to $2.90 per capita. That's per revenue procedure 23-34 released in November by the IRS. Also increases the small state minimum for 9% LIHTCs to a record $3.4 million. Private activity bond per capita multiplier also increases to a record $125 per capita. Those figures for the small set aside were $3.2 million and only $120 per capita for bonds. So that's great. Increasing, I think that's one of the largest increases we've seen in recent memory. Switching gears, the Federal Housing Finance Agency this week announced 2024 multifamily loan purchase cap structure for both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Loan purchase caps have been set to $70 billion for each government-sponsored enterprise for a combined total $140 billion. This is a decrease compared to 2022 when the caps were $75 billion each. This was an interesting read. The National Council of State Housing Agencies, or NCSHA, this fall released its revised LIHTC recommended practices for the state housing agencies, state HFAs. A task force of 21 executive directors and NCSHA staff started work on this revision last year already. Just, I want to go over a couple of highlights, but you can definitely kind of search NCSHA LIHTC recommended practices. A couple of updates, starting with reserves. Agencies should consider restrictions imposed by other funding sources when determining a property's reserve requirements. After decades at the same amount, the recommended per unit replacement reserve increased by $50 to $300 for new construction and $350 for a rehabilitation. Many times you may have seen reserves at $250, $300, NCSHA possibly increasing, suggests $350. Utility allowances is the next item I want to touch on. In a subject matter which crosses between underwriting and operations, the recommended practices encourage allowing the energy consumption model based on an analysis by a licensed engineer or another qualified professional or the agency itself. The rationale is to take advantage of the benefits created by recent legislation on renewable and energy efficiency and related tax credits, which I can talk on in a little bit. So utility allowances, a key thing to focus on. The second last item, participants, development participants, if you will. NCSHA and its members express a strong desire to encourage more diversity in development and management teams by training or technical assistance, facilitating joint ventures, and providing pre-development capital. The goal is to remove barriers and encourage building capacity among new underrepresented participants. Last bit of news I want to touch on, kind of exciting as well. It's always good to get good news. There's so many difficult and challenges in the environment. So the final piece of news, after a year-long comprehensive review of the Federal Home Loan Bank system and its role in the housing market, the Federal Housing Finance Agency recently released its report, FHLB Bank System at 100, Focusing on the Future. The report says FHFA will advance several regulatory proposals to ensure that Federal Home Loan Banks remain a source of reliable housing liquidity and support housing affordability and community development. The report also says FHFA will ask Congress to enact legislation to increase each Federal Home Loan Bank's contributions to its AHP program, the Affordable Housing Program, from 10% of its revenues to 20%, and urge the FHLBs to voluntarily increase funding for their AHPs. We know gap financing is at a premium, and I know there's a lot of discussions at the FHLBs that those amounts of awards per project will increase, and that'll be exciting to see. Now kind of jumping into our year-end review, Garrett. I looked at our podcast last year for the year-end review. It was kind of fun to see what we did. And really two last things before I turn over to Garrett. A very sincere thank you to our listeners. It's exciting. Garrick and I in the spring will be at our 100th episode. And Garrick, 100 episodes ago, do we think we'd be here? I don't know. But listeners, thank you for tuning in, giving us suggested topics. We enjoy our discussions and exploring what's new in legislation, financing, construction. We like getting out there and seeing what's new and so forth. Just one of my favorite stories, Garrick, I was at a conference, it was probably a little bit less than a year ago, and I was talking and someone came over to me and said, "Hey, I recognize that voice. I think, do you have a podcast?" And it's been a lot of fun being out there. And then just also want to really sincerely thank our guests who come on. We know it's busy. It's hard to keep up with your day job, but to take time out and join us on our podcast, Garrick, two guys talking about affordable housing and housing in general. We want to thank our guests as well. So that, Garrick, I want to turn it over to you, kind of kicking off. Garrick, what episodes, what topics stand out from this past 12 months?
Yeah, well, thanks for that intro, by the way. It's funny, too, because at a conference, somebody came up and said, "It's finally, I get to put a face with a name," because I hear your voice all the time, because you sound pretty similar than you do on the podcast. So it's kind of interesting, and they're always appreciative of the things that we're actually putting up on here. So it's great. 100 episodes is a lot. I will say, as far as favorite episodes, any episode with Don and this whole production team is my favorite episode. Our production team is great. They keep us on track and get us information, and the quality is always great. And hopefully our guests feel the same way that are on. Looking at this past year, there are a couple of things that stood out to me. Obviously, there's the things that affect the industry from a granular standpoint. But one of the episodes that came to mind was the discussion with Gina Saganik. So she was discussing toxic building materials and how organizations strive for healthier building products and trying to achieve that. It's funny because after that episode, I just started noticing different products around my house, you know, and whether or not they're plastic and what's being electrified. And now every building I go into, you know, I've always looked at the buildings, the building products, because we're in the development space. But now I'm really looking at the floors, windows, thinking about like what's the toxicity in this building and how much might be gassing out and what's quote plastic. In addition, I'm starting to look at trains, Myers, and thinking about what she was talking about, the supply chain, and like what types of chemicals are actually being transferred on there. And are they headed somewhere to create building products that are going to end up being in houses? So I hope her ideas of detoxifying her buildings are going to catch on sooner than later. And especially with those that make their way into residential developments. You know, I was shocked that when she mentioned carpet and the byproduct carpet's really plastic, that was a larger culprit of plastic waste annually than plastic straws, water bottles, and bags thrown out each year. That's kind of alarming. So I thought that was a really good episode that I learned more than I knew before she came on and discussed a lot of these things. And then obviously I work a lot in historic transactions. And so one of our really recent episodes with Ramsey Historic Consultants, I thought was great because we've had some discussions of pairing LIHTC with HTCs. We've had some investors on and some developers that work in that space, but we hadn't really touched on what I find is like a huge barrier for entry is that early stage. And we haven't really touched on that very early stage process, which I think is one of the most important components to that HTC development lifecycle. You know, they brought a lot of details related to what is needed when deciding to embark in the development, you know, when you're pursuing whether Fed and state HTCs. They did a great job providing insight on how to interface with the National Park Service and the various state historic agencies. Developing real estate obviously already has a ton of hurdles, and adding state and Fed HTCs in that capital stack is definitely adding more complexity. But they definitely highlighted just how much activity is actually out there and amount of deals are working on this space. And so therefore, navigating those complexities just takes the right consultants and early stage planning. So I hope developers out there who are looking into working with those credits within their financial plans got a lot out of that podcast. I got even more than what I had already known, just having them actually on there and listening to it directly. And then lastly, again, another recent podcast, which was one with Ed Malaspina. He did a great job walking us through what's driving the recent surge in insurance costs. Really enjoyed him breaking it down into the two components of the underwriting process for property with rate and premium. And he was talking about it's really premium that's driving that larger component, which he tied to increases in values of the buildings, the cost to replace, which makes sense with all the inflationary items we're having on building costs. But obviously you threw out, well, what about, you know, this 400% increases, which he said, hey, look, there's been a lot of claims, and it's not really about the claims. He's like, it's the severity of these claims And he talked about how developers can try to mitigate that. So I thought that was good. Some of the trends I'd like to see making their way in there. He talked a lot about sensors and suppression items, you know, to sort of mitigate the severity of an event that may happen. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I mean, I don't think it was necessarily good news. Like insurance is just is obviously not going down. So, but at least it gave a little insight to hopefully some people who were wondering what was really driving that.
Right. Those are good. Like you said, Garrick, anyone I do with you, I agree, is a good podcast. So, but my couple green, you know, we had probably a number of podcasts, probably more than two or three, four podcasts, and we touched on a lot of credits, but Inflation Reduction Act, and we're going to be talking about it continuing because as we'll get to a little bit later, there's more and more to come. We're just at the tip of the iceberg with what's kind of been out there. And we're all familiar. We've talked a lot of times about the solar credit, which for every affordable housing, especially 4% deal, it's going to be worth looking at. Of course, we have the base 30% credit if it's less than a megawatt. We might be able to get some additional adders based on physical location, our unit, energy, community. You're right, kind of there's this additional 10% adder that we're not quite there yet and kind of buying, if you will, equipment that major components, iron and steel and so forth, are made in America. We're hearing maybe sometime in 2025, but what will that do to cost? We're not sure. And then again, if you're some that you can apply for, that window just kind of closed, and we'll kind of see what comes out of that. If you are in a low-income community, some specialized affordable housing programs. So right now, a lot of math is 30%, maybe 40% solar credit. Again, you tack that on to a 4% project. There's no reduction in eligible basis. That's new under IRA. Maybe you're in a QCT. Maybe you're in a state that has a state credit, right? There's more and more states. Garrick kind of talked about state credits. So we're seeing a lot of deals, so just starting with 4% deals, where that cost of solar between the federal credit, federal solar credit, plus the LIHTC credit, you're maybe covering 70% to 95 to 100% of the cost of the solar equipment. Now you're going to get energy, right? You're producing electricity, energy. You need less from the grid, so to speak, from the utility. We're seeing paybacks 1 year, maybe 1 to 4 years, right? I don't want to be overly aggressive. Whereas before, paybacks are 10 years, 15 years. Does it really make sense? Now if your payback's 1 to 4 years, so we're really seeing, and every developer we're talking to, let's look at solar. We have some looking at geothermal. So kind of very exciting about solar. The other kind of early dollars out of the gate are the GRRP program for projects with project-based rental assistance or PBRA contracts. You heard of the cohorts, elements, leading edge, comprehensive. And there are a couple they're bringing ready a couple rounds of awards. So here in early, as you're listening to this podcast, in early 2024, there's a couple more rounds for leading edge and comprehensive. So if you have a PBRA contract on your asset, you're starting to contemplate your repositioning strategy, maybe you're very, very early, that's not a problem. Give us a call. Call whoever you're talking to about, could you apply? We're working on a leading edge award right now, $5.4 million on a 92-unit project. Probably going to be the first one to close in the country. It has solar, it has geothermal, insulation, you know, windows, kind of very exciting project. Again, I think what's exciting is, like I said, it's just the tip of the iceberg, a lot more to come out. We touched on, you might have heard, there's solar for all applications, which just were submitted, which again is going to be getting probably low interest rate loans out to low-income communities, low-income housing projects. There's another $14 billion coming in the National Clean Investment Fund, which should have some applicability to housing. A lot of discussion that's out there that I haven't seen much, Garrick, and we probably can follow up on this, is when are all these, like, for electrification of your units, up to $14,000 in rebates that's going to be rolled out state by state. A lot of people are asking us about that, but I think it's slow to come out. That will be a rebate. So a lot of impact on IRA. Just one other item I want to talk about is we've had, again, a couple of episodes on just creativity with taxes and bonds. These deals, we know it's interest rates, it's costs, it's insurance. These are tough to do. So it's great to see attorneys, lenders, private placement companies and so forth to be creative. And we had a great episode, I thought, with Kent Newman and Allison King of Tiber Hudson on the cashback forward structure, which not only minimizes negative arbitrage, but due to some structuring and some additional eligible basis, may actually give you extra proceeds into the deal. We've talked a couple times about 501c3 bonds and essential function bonds as a way to kind of like stabilize and get workforce housing deals done, acquisition, some new construction. So creative financing is something that always kind of like gets my ear and want to makes me listen and things like that. And then I think, Garrick, as you said, just trends, insurance. We had maybe one or two episodes on LIHTC equity. which as a whole has been going down. It's interesting. We saw 10-year treasuries at over a decade high at 5% in October. It's been down now in the 4.3 something. So we'll see what that does. I think that's earlier than expected. So those are some of my highlights, Garrick. Garrick, maybe let's maybe just move to, maybe it's based on some things you saw in 2023. What's in your mind? What are you looking forward to seeing around the housing space in 2024?
Oh, well, that's a loaded question. I'd like to see a lot of things. But look, just in keeping with this year and what I've highlighted, what my favorite episodes were, I'll start with those, right? I mean, I'd like to see some type of legislation or some type of policy goals, which highlights the need for that cleaner building products through this whole supply chain, not just hey, let's take plastic out of things, but really try to eliminate cancer alleys, as she mentioned on that episode. We focused a lot on energy efficiency, right? And I know people do focus on clean building products, but I just like to see it more of a priority or at least at pace of the priority of how we're focusing on energy. That'd be interesting to transform the industry in that way. As it relates to the historic episode, I mean, obviously you talk about creative financing. I'd love to see some sort of modernization of that code. I know there have been bills in the past that have been put forth to maybe drop that substantial rehab test down to 50%. That would be great for certain developments. And then also like small deal sizes, recently in the IRA that they had with the energy ITCs, you can now just transfer them and sell them directly outside the partnership without having an equity investor in there for that purpose. Maybe they can apply that same sort of rule to smaller transactions, which were very hard to monetize those credits on smaller transactions. So that would be something interesting. I don't really think that would be difficult to sort of apply. As far as affordable housing, we do pair a lot of HCCs with LIHTC. So in keeping with what they did in the energy bill, right, the IRA, where it's like maybe HCCs, if you do them on a LIHTC deal, doesn't reduce the eligible basis. And then maybe they can increase the percentage from 20% to 30%. So there's additional equity generated off historic tax credits as long as you're pairing them with LIHTC transactions. That would be interesting. Or maybe even new market transactions, depending on how that code would play itself out. That would be a way to sort of modernize that piece from, in speaking with different layers on that financing stack. And also for the insurance, I know we talked about how these premiums were going up, but clearly if there's more severity in these claims, maybe there could be some type of legislation that sort of assists because like Ed mentioned, what if all of a sudden some states are finding it hard for insurers to go in within their state, or if they do have insurance, it's 400 or 500% over what they're normally paying. And that would just detrimental all around affordable housing because we're already running on thin operating pro formas. So any help there would be great.
Very good, Garrick. Yeah, I'll just give a couple of myself. Just I think everyone's watching interest rates. Like I just mentioned before, they're dropping here. We're recording at the end of early December. 10-year treasuries down to 4.37, I believe, was yesterday's rate. Again, a lot of people we talked to, economists and so forth, thought rates would kind of hold steady till maybe third, fourth quarter 2024. We'll all be watching that. Not to just over-discuss the Inflation Reduction Act, but a lot more to come out. These rebates, many state QAPs are, having increased levels and getting green certification. So really looking at how can you utilize all of these benefits under IRA because you're doing it, your state agency is requiring it. So that's something I'm watching and we're going to do a lot of work on. We definitely talked a couple times. We had David Gasson on from Housing Advisory Group. It's something, Garrick, we've been talking about, I feel like probably in the last 3 or 4 years, the kind of some version of the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act. There's a version out there right now that has a lot of support. Keep talking to your senators and legislators. Right now, there's about 30 co-sponsors in the Senate, and it's about an equal split of Republican and Democrat. Kind of the same thing in the House, a much larger number of co-sponsors, an equal split of Democrats and Republicans. Again, very powerful. The current legislation as drafted would increase the amount of 9% tax credits by 50% over a 2-year phase-in. It would reduce the 50% test that many people have talking about to 25%. Almost half the states in the country have run out of taxes and bond volume cap. In short, well, let me one other item. It would give states a discretionary 30% basis boost for 4% deals. Right now, as you are aware, states have that for 9% deals, not 4% deals, right? If your 4% deal could get a basis boost, how much would that help? Actually, up to a 50% basis boost for serving very low-income individuals and units. And so again, just trying to close gaps in deals. And so their projections that this could increase the amount of affordable units produced by 1 million above the current tools that are out there in the toolbox. So again, that's very exciting to watch. Will that happen? Maybe in early 2024, we'll watch that and keep you in touch. A couple of trends, and I think there's going to be some funding coming out for this first one. And we saw, and I think, Garrick, we touched on a few weeks ago, office to residential conversions. I know the president's office put out kind of a compendium of possible funding options. We know there's going to be one or two other funding programs, I think, coming out regarding that. So expect a podcast coming out in early 2024 around office to residential conversions. And then something, again, we also had talked with Enterprise on this that I'm watching closely and working on some projects, faith-based housing, right? We know the mission is there. As we talked in the podcast, the physical building is aging and there's deferred maintenance and maybe the population of their congregation is aging, or maybe it's more remote through, you know, COVID and so forth. Just that, you know, a lot of these sites have been in cities for many times and have prime real estate locations, and there's going to be programs and education and funding and support around, I think, faith-based housing. So definitely a trend that I'm watching. So it's been a good year. Every year, Garrick, it seems like there's one thing or another, insurance costs, last 3-4 years with COVID, but looking forward to a good 2024. And again, listeners, thank you. That's it for this episode of Buzz House. Garrick and I enjoyed walking through this review of 2023. Once again, I'm Don Bernards.
And I'm Garrick Gibson. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. For additional resources around multifamily housing, check out BakerTilly.com. If you have a suggestion for the show, email us at buildabakertilly.com. That's BUILD@BakerTilly.com. See you next time on Buzz House.